What's going on, everybody? It's your buddy. It's your pals, Pass Phoenix, the YWC Reality Check. And this is WWE Last Week, your weekly look back at the week that was in the WWE. Now, you're saying, Spaz, how come we're getting this so early? How come we're not dropping this on Monday? How come we're dropping this on Saturday? What's the deal? The deal, quite frankly, is I got a loaded weekend, and you're probably getting a Rebellion review from me tomorrow, and you're probably getting NXT Spring Break and preview from me on Monday, so I'm doing this tonight. So, with all that being said, hope you enjoy. There's not a whole lot, there's newsworthy stuff, but there's not a whole lot of story going on this week that's not just shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic until we get to the draft. So I'm going to sort of do this bullet point by bullet point, but I do want to send a quick shout out to our boy Jake DeMarco. We finally got together for our second episode of The State of Wrestling, and listen at your own risk. The topic of the last pod was AEW's reaction to the current success WWE is feeling. Are we biased? Yes, of course we are, but also we're coming at you with some facts, some opinion, some slanted opinions, and some surprisingly unbiased opinions as well, so check that out at your own peril. Also, if you're listening to this Saturday morning, please be sure to go back and check out, I've already done a preview for Rebellion that is happening tonight. If you're listening to this after Saturday, it's kind of irrelevant, but by then I'll have a review up. So, week two of the Triple H era post-WrestleMania 40, and I'm not going to count the weeks, but it is just, it's the first regular week. It's the first, you know, the wheels are on the track and now the track's rolling down the way. That metaphor didn't work at all. What I'm saying, WrestleMania happened, and then Raw and SmackDown after WrestleMania themselves are special shows. So this was your first, this is what a regular Raw looks like, this is what a regular SmackDown looks like. Now, it seems they're keeping the small stages, and you guys have heard me talk a lot about the small screen flex, and the Raw and SmackDown around WrestleMania having the no screen flex, as well as NXT Standard Deliver, but they're keeping the smaller stage. And when they don't have people behind it, they're putting up that curtain that's sort of like loosely lit and whatnot. I don't mind it, to be honest. The small stage, it's not as garish. I wish they would get rid of the LED ring posts and the LED guardrail, but we are where we are. The minimalistic stage, I think, looks really nice. And we've got a lot of aesthetic things to talk about. So I thought I would start with that. Raw in Montreal. Now, gotta say, since they were up in Canada, I cannot wait for Money in the Bank. I've got my tickets. I'm going to SmackDown. I'm going to Money in the Bank. I'm going to Heat Wave. Haven't been there live for any NXT content since well before COVID, whenever NXT TakeOver Toronto 2 was. So that'll be a lot of fun. And the rumor is, now cover your ears if you're one of the anti-Fed people. The rumor is, Heatwave in Toronto at Scotiabank Arena with me, with my ass in the 100 section watching the whole thing go down, is where we're going to get the debut of Julia. I have never seen Julia. I'm intentionally not watching anything of hers so that I can get a clear vision of what she has to offer NXT in an NXT ring. Now, there's the whole thing with Rossi and Marigold, and she's going to bounce between WWE and Marigold, even though WWE apparently never works with other companies, which is bullshit. So that's really cool. That'll be a feather in our cap as well. And I mean, Money in the Bank's never happened in Toronto before, and I've never seen Money in... I've seen ladder matches, let's be real. But yeah, there's never been Money in the Bank in Toronto, and I'm really looking forward to it. Before that, obviously, we have Backlash in France, and we're already starting to build towards Backlash in France, which, according to Wikipedia, is not called Backlash 2024. It's just called Backlash France, like we had Elimination Chamber Perth. So, let's get into Raw. Let's get the really, really unfortunate news out of the way first. Raw starts with Adam Pearce in the ring, Rhea Ripley coming out. Rhea Ripley was set or advertised to address the attack from Liv Morgan last week, and it's not good. She comes out in an arm brace. They announced on commentary that she's been champion for 380 days. She doesn't even give a proper speech. She just kind of grabs over. Well, we all know why we're here, and this is kind of bullshit. I got to vacate the title because they're telling me I got to go away for a bit, and the crowd loudly chants bullshit. Rhea Ripley is one of the WWE main characters. You know, if you don't agree with me, argue with the wall. She addresses Liv Morgan and the attack from last week. She says, you know, this is all because of your stupid little revenge tour. If you had a problem with me and you were sad about what I did to you and you had come to me to my face, I still would have destroyed you, but at least I would have respected you. She lays her belt down in the middle of the ring and says, whoever wins this title next week. Now, apparently, if you follow the advertising that was playing tonight during SmackDown, apparently they're deciding the new champion in a battle royal. That's really lame. That's really fucking lame. That's all I got. But she says, whoever wins my title, I'm coming back for blood. Liv comes down the ramp to mock her from the rampway. Rhea Ripley wants to kill her, even though she's only got one arm and Liv Morgan obviously is hiding behind a plethora of security. One of the security guards eats a headbutt from Rhea Ripley. Ironically and unfortunately, throughout this entire segment, there's a guy standing on the hard cam side right behind Rhea Ripley's head with a sign that says, bring back bra and panties matches. Wrestling! When we come back from the commercial break, we see the big group hug and the big goodbye from the Judgment Day, and it just sucks. I said it in State of Wrestling with Jake a couple of days ago. The only upside that I get out of this at all, because there is no upside to somebody getting injured. Yes, there's the argument that if somebody goes away for a while and you can miss them, they're twice as over when they come back. I understand that, but it's not strong enough to make me want somebody to get hurt. So if there's any glimmer of a bright side of all this, is at least it happened after Mania. She got to have that title reign from WrestleMania last year. That amazing match that she had with Charlotte Flair. Carry it for a full year, carry it into the following year's WrestleMania, and then have another banger with Becky Lynch under the most tenuous circumstances possible. Becky Lynch sick. Becky Lynch running a fever. Becky Lynch having strep throat. Rhea Ripley herself dealing, as she said very publicly, with anxiety, panic attack type issues, and they still went up and had a banger. So she was able to bookend that title reign, if it had to end, with two great matches with two of the remaining three relevant four horsewomen. I don't know. I got nothing. You guys know I got, as a fan, I got a lot of love for Rhea Ripley. I hope she comes back bigger, badder than ever. If the crossover rumors are true, I still want to see that match with her and Jordynne Grace, whether it's on a TNA show, whether it's on a WWE show. It would be a real shot. And I'm not saying TNA needs help or TNA deserves help or WWE is going to give handouts, anything like that. It would be a real shot in the arm for TNA if they could advertise Jordynne Grace versus Rhea Ripley as a main event of one of their shows. It just would. It just would. And on the human side of things, like, it sucks. Like, she's riding absolutely high off of WrestleMania. The WrestleMania, all the vibes for Judgment Day throughout WrestleMania were awesome. This fucking sucks. It just does. So, who has to come out after that? Who has to raise everybody's spirits again after that shitty, shitty news? And the whole crowd being kind of downed, kind of bummed, kind of like monotone. It's the return of Sheamus. And the return of Sheamus was advertised, I figured. He's going to come out and I'm back, fella, and cut a promo or whatever. But he didn't. He just came out for a match. Put him in a match with Ivar. Of course, it banged. You know, two big meaty men slapping man meat and all that type of thing. Speaking of which, if you're knocking on Sheamus for being out of shape, you can go fuck yourself. You probably look like me behind your Twitter screen. So that's a bunch of bullshit. He's got the old music back, so everybody's singing Lobster Head. That's pretty good. He came out in fight shorts instead of what we would normally see him in as his typical ring attire. Apparently, they're doing WWE-branded ring attire, and Sheamus was the first person to, like, wrestle in it. And all he said on social media, which I'm sure the Freakazoids absolutely loved, is, you know, if you're proud of your brand, wear your brand. And people went nuts about that as well. Second rope white noise on somebody the size of Ivar is insane. Hits him with the kneecap, which is a way better name than V-Trigger. Hits him with the bro kick, gets the win. Thought there would be a post-match preview. A post-match promo, and there wasn't either. There was a WWE.com exclusive where they asked him, you know, do you have any message upon your return? And he basically looked in the camera and says, nobody wants any of this, which is nice. So we got Bad news. Really nice moment with the Judgment Day. Really cool moment with Sheamus coming back and absolutely destroying Ivar. Ivar has to go and fight for the North American Championship at Spring Breakin', but right now he's eating L's left, right, and center, and I don't think that's going to change next week. Spoiler alert. Triple H comes out. I'm thinking, all right, cool. There's been rumors of this, that, and the next, and he comes into the ring. Adam Pearce is in the ring. There's a pedestal in the ring. And it's like, all right, we're doing title stuff. Now, we've already got new men's titles. That happened not too long ago. We've already got women's championships. That happened not too long ago. The U.S. and Intercontinental Championships, despite what most people have to say, are pretty okay at the moment. I like the Intercontinental Championship that we have right now. People say that it's bad because it's not the plate that they like. But if you put that aside, it's not a bad-looking belt. It's just that you don't want it to be new, or you don't want it to be not what you grew up on. And don't get me wrong, I understand that. I am the only staunch vocal defender of the so-called tag team penny belt. Like, before they split them off into red and blue, when they were like bronze on black, and they did legitimately look like pennies, I thought that made total sense. You know, your main titles are gold, your mid-card titles are silver, your tag team titles can be bronze, and it was two warriors on the plate, and it's tag team wrestling. That made 100% sense, but nobody liked them but me. That's just fine. But Triple H is out there, he brags about Mania, and people lose their shit about that. If you accomplish what they accomplished during WrestleMania, of course you're going to brag about it. Get over it. I mean, it's becoming a meme now from the other side. But Wembley, though, do it more than once a year. Come back and talk to me. He calls out the new tag team champions, Miz, R-Truth. Truth gets insane, you deserve it, chance. Miz gets some chance in his own right as well. R-Truth proceeds to confuse Triple H with Tommaso Ciampa, and then they reveal the new Raw titles, except they're not the new Raw titles, they are the World Tag Team Championships. Now, they're two round, I will say. They are two round, but they are gold, they do have a little bit of red in the titling, so it's still a little bit of the Raw branding, but it's not the Raw titles anymore, and it looks very ornate, and it looks like an award, and it looks more, it doesn't look like an old version of the tag team titles. What it looks like is, if you don't read the wording on it, it looks like both of them are holding a title that could be a world title in design. Now, we're gonna get to the other ones in a second, when we talk about SmackDown. But, I mean, these are fine. I think they look cool. They're a lot more intense looking than the other belts that I liked. But it's fine. Like, we got new champions, we got new championship belts, we gotta have new contenders, we toss it into a triple threat match in a second. But it's fine. Triple H and R-Truth and The Miz and Adam Pearce do a little bit of comedy. Miz and R-Truth go to the commentary table. And then we go on to the triple threat match for the number one contendership. Now, the bummer about all this, number one contendership match, triple threat match, we're switching gears very quickly coming off of WrestleMania going into Backlash. I figured this would be for the title shot at Backlash. I said before WrestleMania, if they win, I said after WrestleMania, because they won, I don't think Miz and R-Truth are long for those titles, which is fine. Truth got his Mania moment, Miz got to have something that didn't make him look like a fucking goofball. That's all I need from that. But no, the number one contendership match was for a title match next week. Now we're going to decide SmackDown number one contenders as well. That's for Backlash. We decided number one contenders for the men's championships, and those are all for Backlash. This is for Raw next week. Now this is the last Raw before the draft. The draft is happening next Friday. I get it. They need something to draw to the Raw before the draft stuff starts. I understand all that, especially considering who won and my own biases. I wish this was for Backlash. I wish this was going in front of that huge crowd in France. I mean, at the last minute, you could have thrown in the Wolf Dogs, because we know that Baron Corbin is ridiculously popular in France for some reason. Anyways, DIY, The New Day, and the Creed Brothers. DIY is still in their DX gear from WrestleMania, which is awesome. This is not the type of triple threat match that I like. It's a triple threat match, and there's three teams, and one member of each team is always in the ring. It's not the two guys in at once, and anybody can tag anybody from any team, which is a lot more fun. This isn't quite that. I don't know what to say here. The New Day is the New Day. They do awesome New Day stuff. Kofi Kingston's still wrestling in his boxers. I don't get it. I've stopped trying. DIY do awesome DIY stuff. And the Creeds absolutely throw everybody around like empty tracksuits, to borrow the Adam Nicholas expression. They have absolutely a suplex party several times throughout this match. But DIY get the win with the, I think it was the meat in the middle. I didn't write it down because I'm not smart. DIY win. They're going to go up against Awesome Truth next week, which is sort of the end of this four-man Regeneration X jokey gimmick that they had going on, because none of them are fighting. None of them are fighting the Judgment Day anymore, and that's what they came together to do. It's like a Cody's Avengers situation. They're not a faction. They're just a bunch of people that got together to fight a faction. So that makes sense. I mean, it does make for a face versus face match for next week, which isn't always the most engaging. We'll talk about that on SmackDown as well. So I understand maybe from that point of view not wanting to put it on the pay-per-view, but when all the other number one contender matches that happened this week were for a shot at the pay-per-view, DIY kind of feel like they got the short end of the stick here. And yes, I'm saying that because I like DIY and I'm biased, but you came to my channel, you know what you signed up for. We replay the number one contendership match from last week, where Jay won after CM Punk screwed over Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre watches it. Caleb Braxton tries to interview him. He doesn't say very much. He laughs. His face goes serious. He Claymore kicks the TV. And we move swiftly on. Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell took on Ivy Nile and Maxine Dupri. And this is rerun shit. This is like pre-COVID WWE shit. This time it's Indy that does the cheating. They get the win. The story is weird. I don't get it. Candice LeRae coming out that first week, and yes, I'm stealing part of this bit of my diatribe here from What Culture, because they hit a very good point when they said this. In the first week, Candice LeRae stopping in the middle of the ring, giving that diatribe to Maxine Dupri, you know, aren't you glad your brother's dead? He doesn't have to see what a fucking failure you are. Roddy, Roddy, rah. Was awesome, and it could have been something cool, but after that, it's just, she's kind of been generic bitchy heel number five, while Indy Hartwell sort of throws her hands up in the air and says, "Oh my god, Candice, what's going on? What's all this about?" Terrible accent, I'm aware, don't even worry about it. Now Indy decides she's going to cheat too. In all of this, and it sucks because I do like Indy Hartwell, I do like Candice LeRae, Maxine Dupri is coming along, I suppose. I just want to see more Ivy Nile. I don't know when they decided that Ivy Nile and Maxine were going to be a full-time tag team. I really, really don't. Take Ivy Nile. If Shayna Baszler isn't going to go... Or sorry, if Shayna Baszler ever decides that she's going to go for that world title, take Zoe Stark, team her up with Ivy Nile. That's a team that makes sense. Make Ivy Nile a bitchy heel. She's already a wrestling machine, even though she's small. I know people are weird about her being small, even though we shit on WWE for years for being weird about the small guys like your Rey Mysterios and your Shawn Michaels and your Bret Harts and such and so forth, and your Eddie Guerreros and your Chris Benoit. Oh my god, you can't say Chris Benoit. But, yeah, I came out of all of this being like, the story doesn't make sense. Maxine is kind of struggling. I'm saying that trying to be nice. I just want to see more Ivy Nile, because Ivy Nile is a badass, and if you watched a shred of NXT when she was in it, you would know that. There's a great video package on Damian Priest that made him come off way more of a babyface than I think they wanted to before they split up the Judgment Day. Everything from him in NXT to him winning the championship at WrestleMania made me miss the NXT version of Damian Priest, the sort of the... Not making a Baron Corbin joke here, but sort of like the lone wolf, I'm just going to go in there and get my shit done. He had slightly better music at the time as well. Ironically, he had a pretty good series of matches with Finn Balor in NXT, if you want to go back and watch them, but I think some of those were in front of no crowd. So, again, watch at your own risk. We finally got the match between Andrade and Dominic that they've been teasing for weeks and weeks and weeks. He's got JD in his corner. Finn Balor at some point in the back asked Damian Priest when they're going to go for the tag titles again, and he says, well, you're facing Jey Uso tonight, so why don't you just focus on that? So he's already brushing off Finn Balor, which is a little bit of signposting, more signposting than I would particularly like, because a breakup should be a surprise. there's been a lot of talk over WrestleMania, over that main event at WrestleMania, hearkening back to the dissolution of the Shield and Seth Rollins turning on the rest of the members of the Shield when he joined the Authority, and that wasn't really signposted that I remember. Can we get back to that? I know there's long-term storytelling, and, oh, I picked up this little breadcrumb, and aren't I smart? I know what's going to happen before it happens. I know a lot of people like that. Surprise us with something. Surprise us with something. But anyways, Dom's out there with JD. I'm happy to have Andrade back, but this is a pretty average match, I'm not going to lie. The commentators spent a lot of time talking about the old Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero custody of Dominic ladder match from back in the day, which was got to a point of almost being awkward. Canadian Destroyer on the apron by Dominic isn't expected because people still think Dominic is shit, and he's not. Andrade gets the win with the... can't remember the name of his new finisher. It's the whole draping DDT, not draping, interlock DDT thing that he does. JD and Dominic beat him down after the match is over, and the save is made by Ricochet. It's not entirely out of nowhere because they have been targeting Ricochet, but Ricochet coming to the aid of Andrade is kind of random, and we're getting that match next week. It's going to be Dom and JD taking on Ricochet and Andrade. Now, Ricochet and JD McDonagh had an awesome match a couple weeks ago. And the criticism I've seen that match get, and it's still going around, is like, oh, they're just trying to be Will Ospreay. What? Will Ospreay's great, don't get me wrong. He's kind of being a cunt to Triple H right now, undeservingly. Will Ospreay's a great fucking wrestler. I openly admit that I'm bummed we didn't get Will Ospreay. But how are JD McDonagh and Ricochet trying to be Will Ospreay? Make it make sense. We replay SmackDown from last week, the introduction of Tama Tonga, the ousting of Jimmy Uso, and the pseudo-takeover of Solo Sikoa, and then we go to the back once again, and Caleb Braxton is asking Jey Uso about that, if he has anything to say about his family, even though he clearly left SmackDown and came to Raw to get away from his family, and he keeps it short and sweet. He's sort of shaking his head like, I told him to come with me. I gotta focus on what I'm doing tonight. And then he proceeds to talk about the fact that he's gonna face Finn Balor tonight, and that's what he's gotta focus on, and I don't blame him. It's kind of weird. I get it. Like, hey, you're the only one in the family that's on the outside watching all this happen. What do you think about it? But also, if you want to pretend that wrestling is real, if you want to pretend that it's a real sports feel, why wouldn't you ask the athlete about the competition that he's in that night? I don't know. It's where wrestling leans over into storytelling. And we get another women's tag and another set of I really don't know what to tell you, because Katana Chance and Caden Carter deserve way more than they're getting. They took a loss to Chelsea Green and Piper Niven, who just took a loss to Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair, who are not a real team but are getting wins because, well, we know why. Liv Morgan gets interviewed about her interaction with Rhea Ripley from earlier, the news about Rhea Ripley getting injured and having to vacate the title, and she kind of makes a good point. She sort of goes on a pseudo Drew McIntyre tangent about, like, I don't see what the big deal is when she injured me and I had to be gone for a while. Nobody had any sympathy for me. It wasn't sad. It wasn't anything. I just call it an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, an arm for an arm, and, you know, I'm going to go be the new champion. Watch me. Which, it's that thing about heels that are being bitchy, but it's almost more frustrating because they're right, because nobody did. They didn't make a big, I mean, storyline-wise, they didn't build in any sympathy, but they didn't build any sympathy towards Rhea Ripley, or Liv Morgan, when Rhea Ripley injured her. And now it's come full circle, and there was the other shit with Liv Morgan. Oh my god, she smokes pot. Okay, who the fuck cares? It's 2024, there's bigger things to worry about. So, you know, she's right. It sucks that she's right, but she's right. I mean, there's a little bit of people want to throw the Barbie doll stuff at her. They can't exactly throw the Barbie doll stuff at Rhea Ripley, can they? But it was a relatively decent promo. I wish this promo had actually happened in the ring. I wish this wasn't an interview segment in the back. I wish she had come out and cut this promo in the ring. I know people don't like Liv Morgan, and I know why people don't like Liv Morgan. So let's not pretend. Cody Rhodes comes out to cut a promo, and he does all the main character of WWE things. He plugs the promo, or he plugs the pay-per-view in France. He makes reference to the AJ Styles versus LA Knight number one contenders match that's coming up this Friday. He thanks Seth Rollins for being his shield at WrestleMania. He kind of touches on The Rock and the Bloodline and the introduction of Tama Tonga, but not really. He sort of skims over it. He calls out Jey Uso, once he's done thanking Seth Rollins, to thank him for his help during the WrestleMania thing. Now, they got to be careful with this, because the more people you bring in that helped Cody Rhodes get the championship, it doesn't mean he didn't win, but it takes the luster off of it. Like, you didn't go in there and beat somebody. You captained a team that beat another team, which is not the same thing. We haven't reached that point yet. Obviously, at this point, it's still, you know, Captain America thanking all of his Avengers. And I get that, and it works. I just think they have to be careful how much they do it. And then he offers to be in Jay's corner tonight to repay him, and Jay declines, and he does the babyface thing of, like, man, I really appreciate that. I got respect for you and all this. I got to do this by myself. Cody says, cool, got it, respect it, and he fucks off. Jay versus Balor. Balor jumps him before the bell. Jay wins a pretty quick match, and there's a stare down from Priest afterwards with Jay, because they're going to fight. There's a 4-on-1 beatdown. Jay, this is what everybody talked about. This is whatever, and I do think this is cool, but I think the fact that people are suddenly, because Dunn is gone, and Dunn did horrible cinematography for WWE for a long time, I think this, what I'm about to talk about, is awesome, but I also think it's getting inflated a little bit. The fact that Jay escaped the 4-on-1 beatdown through the crowd, they followed him all the way through the crowd, they followed him all the way out of the building to meet up with Sami Zayn, who's staring at the front of the building because they're in Montreal and because he's got all kinds of history here, and I stepped through here for the first time like 26 years ago or something like that. Last year I was here, I didn't beat Roman, but I got my people behind me and all that. I'm going to walk in here the same way I did all those years ago, right through the front door. And the camera follows him all the way back out, and his music hits, and he makes the entrance through the crowd, and it was actually so cool that Jon Moxley did it on Dynamite. Anyways, I'm just being a dick. Calm the fuck down. That takes us into our main event. Sami Zayn defending his new Intercontinental Championship against Chad Gable as a thank you, as an appreciation for all the prep that Gable did with him before his match against Gunther at WrestleMania. And respectful babyface versus babyface match. And these guys are fucking insane. It's a cop-out, I know. I'm not going to tell you what happened in the match. I'm not. It is genuinely one of those, if you didn't see it, pause this podcast, pause this video, pause whatever you're listening to me on, go watch the match, come back. Puts up a hell of a fight. Both of them do. Sami Zayn, Chad Gable, they both put up a hell of a fight. Sami Zayn obviously gets the victory, and Chad Gable's despondent in the corner, and Sami's having his victorious moment in front of his hometown, but he's also got one head over his shoulder because he's a nice guy and he doesn't want his buddy to feel bad. And he tries one or two or three times to, like, pull him to his feet and, you know, give him his due, let the crowd cheer for him as well. Gable pulls back and he raises Sami's hand, big celebration, you know, you deserve it, you're a great champion, blah, blah, blah. Makes his way up the ramp, and Sami Zayn goes out to the outside where his wife is, and I think, please correct me if I'm wrong, I believe her name is Khadija. I really hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, because he has a Rocky-style t-shirt that says, hey Khadija, I did it, which is really nice, really hearkening to the Philadelphia Rocky ethos and all that. So she's there. They're hugging. I think his parents were there as well. So they're all embracing. While he's hugging his wife, Gable comes up from behind, suplexes. He suplexes him out of his wife's arms. And I'm sorry, I've been using this way too much for a wrestling podcast, but that was gorgeous. It was absolutely perfect. And then he beat him up, he suplexed him some more on the floor, and then he pulled him up the ring post. I don't know how to describe this with any kind of clarity, but he pulls him up onto the apron, and then he goes and stands on the turnbuckle. But by the time he's got him in an ankle lock on the turnbuckle, his leg is laced between the turnbuckle bolts. And that's how we go off the air with this absolutely vicious version of Chad Gable. Now, obviously we're going to get a rematch. We're probably going to get that rematch in France. It might be stepped up. Who knows? I might be a dork here, but I gotta imagine that this means that he's removing himself from the Alpha Academy, and the Alpha Academy is just going to be like Otis, Tozawa, and Maxine, which is going to be weird. But this is going to be amazing. He's going to have all kinds of babies. We're going to eventually, and it'll probably just be on an episode of Raw. It probably won't be on a pay-per-view, but eventually we're going to get this heel Chad Gable going up against Cody. I predict Cody Rhodes is coming over to Raw in the draft. Let's just leave that as a spoiler. But we're going to get this heel version of Chad Gable in a really well-advertised weekly TV match on Raw against Cody Rhodes. And that's going to be awesome. Sami Zayn is going to trounce him at the pay-per-view, if they have a match at the pay-per-view. Chad Gable does after that is an interesting conversation to have. I can see Chad Gable going after whoever takes the U.S. title off of Logan Paul. Like, if it's Kevin Owens, we're going to talk about Kevin Owens in a second too, but say Gable gets drafted to SmackDown, Kevin Owens ends up being the one to take the U.S. title off of Logan Paul. Kevin Owens is a former world champion. He doesn't need to hold a U.S. title for long, but he's the perfect guy. The Canadian holding the U.S. title, and then turning around and losing it to the heel U.S. Olympian Chad Gable, would be a pretty excellent story. This was awesome. We all knew that the Chad Gable turn was coming. When he didn't get his shot at Gunther, we knew the heel turn was coming. When Sammy got the shot instead and won, we knew the shot was coming. When Sami Zayn kind of patronized him, probably, in his point of view, with a, hey, buddy, I really appreciate you helping me win this championship. Why don't I give you a title shot? We can all shake hands and hug and be friends afterwards. If they play it up like that, he took that as a really patronizing thing, I think that's a really good angle to go with, at least to get us to Backlash in France. Raw was pretty good. Like I say, it set the table. It had a really hard task. Anything that they did after Rhea Ripley came out with her news was going to be tough. Sheamus came back. That was cool. People online are being dicks to him. Not cool at all. I know there was a rumor that Sheamus was going to be All Elite. Sorry about your fucking luck. We got the new tag titles, which is kind of cool. I like them. I like the SmackDown ones more. We're going to talk about that in a second. But a lot of place setting. We got to figure out a new women's champion next week. We've got a number one contender for Priest. We've got number one contenders for Awesome Truth. A lot of pieces moving. And what I will keep saying is we don't have The Rock anymore. We don't have Roman Reigns anymore. We don't have Seth Rollins anymore. We don't have Becky Lynch anymore. We don't have Rhea Ripley anymore. We don't have Brock Lesnar anymore, although apparently he's coming back soon, which is awesome. Fight me. You'll be arguing with a wall. But basically, we've lost the top half of the WWE roster, and nothing is even slowing down. We got those nice full buildings, don't we? We got those nice full buildings. They're selling out. They said tonight on SmackDown that the Raw team are on a UK tour right now, and they showed some shots from that. Cody Rhodes showed some shots from that. And they're selling out house shows. They're selling out house shows. They set a Madison Square Garden record with a house show not that long ago. WWE's doing all right. And you want to talk about me having really, really short notes. Let's talk about what happened tonight on SmackDown. SmackDown opens up. They've still got that small stage. I've already touched on the small stage. I like the small stage. Let's keep the small stage. We opened up with a number one contenders match. Styles and LA Knight both won triple threat matches last week that got them into this final for the number one contendership for the WWE Championship held by Cody Rhodes, and they're going to have a fight at Backlash in France. what do we prove here? The crowd loves LA Knight, and AJ wins after a finger poke and a forearm. Very, very similar to their match at WrestleMania. Very, very good. I mean, AJ's a tactician, technician. Cody Rhodes, in a pre-recorded comment, referred to AJ Styles as the new excellence of execution. Canadian wrestling fans, let me know what you think about that one. LA Knight's a character. LA Knight is a superstar. LA Knight is a crowd manipulation guy versus the more wrestler's wrestler of AJ Styles. And they had a smaller, more condensed version of the same match they had at WrestleMania. Very, very functional. Very, very two good wrestlers doing two good wrestler things. Not going to set the world on fire, but AJ Styles going to France to give Cody his first on-TV title defense is a pretty damn good choice, and they do have some history to play off of if they choose to. Like I said, Cody Rhodes had some pre-recorded comments from wherever they are in the UK. I thought that was a little bit cool, a little bit different. It was a little better than him hopping up and throwing up a quick Instagram video, which is what they try to do a lot of the time. And yeah, he called him the excellence of execution, the modern day excellence of execution. Don't know how I feel about that entirely. And then he said, all right, I'll see you in France, pretty much. Heyman shows up and he opens the door to the limo and it's Solo Sikoa in a suit. I mean, I know we have Tony D and the family in NXT. I have a lot of fun with Tony D and the family on NXT. Like I say, I'm going to be doing a separate pod in a couple of days to preview Spring Break, and which is why I'm not really touching on NXT tonight. Tony D and the family, Big Mafia, Big Scarface ripoff, Big Sopranos ripoff, whatever. Solo Sikoa coming out in a suit tonight looked like a fucking mob boss. He just did. And Heyman's scared of him. Heyman doesn't know what he's doing, and he's trying to get some answers out of him, and he just sort of sits there and cowers and does scared Paul Heyman things. Back in the ring, Nick Aldis introduces Triple H. Triple H asks Nick Aldis to introduce A-Town Down Under, and they get their new tag team championships. They are throwback design to the old, original SmackDown tag team titles. They look fucking gorgeous. They do not look like any other titles in WWE right now. Now, I would say that I'm excited for one more title reveal, and that is the eventual NXT Women's North American Championship, but they've already shown us what it looks like on the graphic, and it's the exact same belt with a white strap, so that's a little bit of a bummer. Here's hoping they crown that in Toronto as well, so I can be at Heatwave and seeing probably Julia, let's be real, get that championship and up and off the ground. Now, he goes to congratulate Grayson Waller. Grayson Waller goes to give him the handshake, and he swerves and he handshakes his own partner instead. And Nick Aldis says, if you do that again to the big boss there, I'm going to make you disappear, which is nice. Now, why don't you go sit on commentary while we find you a number one contender for the pay-per-view? And the Fatal 4-Way that happened next was Street Profits versus Legado del Fantasma, represented by Angel and Umberto, versus Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate versus the Authors of Pain. Authors of Pain smash everybody for a while, and everybody else kind of flings around them. They did a lot of Tower of Doom type spots. They did a lot of high-flying, multi-person spot. Every spot that you can think of in a Fatal 4-Way match was done in this match. There was a lot of brawling on the outside. Big pile of people match. And like I say, unlike the Triple Threat that happened on Raw, the Fatal 4-Way did operate under the only two guys are in the ring at once, and you can tag anybody from any team. And there's always the debate on commentary, which they did tonight. Corey Graves and Bad News Barrett. Corey Graves is still killing it in his new role as like the lead commentator. Bad News is not a bad guy to have as your color to back you up. But they have that debate that every commentator always has. Well, do you want to be in the match or not? Because if you're in the match, you can get pinned. But if you're out of the match, then you can't catch a win. And it's a little cliche, but it worked. Profits eventually hit a powerbomb neckbreaker combination thing. I don't know. It's Street Profits stuff, and Montez Ford is really animated, so it's fine. And they pinned Legado, who can afford to eat a loss at this point, because right now, Humberto and Angel Garza are really more scripted as Santos's backup rather than a fully operating trio team thing. AOP are the big guys that have just come back and they haven't really won anything yet, so they should probably win something. Follow Karrion Kross on social media. There's a video that he did with the rest of his team as to why they're on NXT. It's worth taking a look at. If Karrion Kross isn't your thing, then he's not going to be your thing, but if he is your thing, go check out that promo. They should have put it on television, but they didn't. And, I mean, what else is there to say? They're not going to beat Bate and Dunn, because Bate and Dunn are really awesome and will probably hold those championships shortly. Now, do I think the Street Profits are going to win in France? No, I don't. I think the next people to hold those titles are going to be Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne. I just don't know when that happens, if I'm completely honest with you. Solo comes out with Heyman, and surprisingly, I mean, not surprisingly, but sort of jarringly, the crowd immediately starts chanting, "We want Roman." And he started doing the Dominic Mysterio thing, which I don't think did him any favors, but it's the whole, like, every time he brings the microphone to his mouth, the boos get louder, so he sort of, like, gets frustrated and stops. Like, don't do that if you're trying to portray this big, like, new Samoan badass mob boss guy. He said, I did what I had to do last week. I lost a brother, but I lost a brother so I could gain another one. He keeps referring to him as his BFT, and they never go out of their way to say what that actually means. So I think it's supposed to be something as stupid as, like, Big Fucking Tama or something like that. But they can't say fucking on TV because they're not on Netflix yet. It's fine. I get it. He doesn't let Paul Heyman say anything because Paul Heyman's just cowering in the corner. And then he looks to the rampway where Tama Tonga drags Kevin Owens down the rampway. And then as you get closer, as the cameras get closer, you realize he's not just dragging Kevin Owens to the ring. He's dragging a bloody Kevin Owens to the ring. Now, am I an AEW fan? Am I waving a flag that says, oh my God, there was blood, it's automatically good? No, I'm noting it because it's not something WWE did before. And they're starting to open the creative floodgates, which means, in general, more people can do more things. I'm not just saying, yay, the squishy red stuff. But I am saying, if they can do that, The Rock can swear, and other people can do other things, we can do it. We got that big, massive fucking brainbuster on the top turnbuckle at WrestleMania with Sami Zayn and Gunther, which, under other regimes, would just not have been allowed. It just wouldn't have been allowed. Owens comes back, tries to fight them 2-on-1. He succeeds momentarily until he gets a spike. Scrappy 1-on-2, but he's still, like, dead. For a moment, I thought they were going to fast-track the turn of Jimmy and have Jimmy come out and save Kevin Owens, but I'm kind of glad that they didn't. They let the moment kind of sit. They made their way back up the rampway, and they did the ones in the air, which was really effective considering the heavily, heavily, heavily taped hand and thumb of Solo Sikoa was drenched in blood. So what was white is now red, and it makes for a nice image. It's fine. As we come back from the commercial break, we find out a little bit more of how KO got bloodied, because Aldis sort of drags Paul Heyman out into the back parking lot, and you see a very, very staged-looking car crash, I'll be fair. But is it, yeah, that was Kevin Owens' car. Can you guess who that one was? And he says, you need to get the bloodline in order or you're going to suffer the consequences. To which Paul Heyman just continues to shit himself. Because he's a, yeah, you need to go rein in the bloodline. Okay, what? So that was fine. Out of nowhere, we got Carlito versus Santos. And fine, I guess. A lot of things this week were fine, because the talking points were more important. Carlito and Santos was fine. Zelina and Electro were on the outside. They decided to brawl a little bit. As Carlito's coming back into the ring, Santos kicks the rope, which hits him in the nuts. He hits him with the Phantom Driver, gets the win. The match isn't the story here. The sword of Damocles is swinging over all this as, okay, when does Carlito turn? Once again, in the back, Santos was interviewed, and they said, are you going to admit that you attacked Dragon Lee? And he basically said what a bad guy would say. It's like, look, if we had done it, we'd be bragging about it right now, but we didn't do it. And it's Carlito, right? I mean, it was the SmackDown parking lot, so if it wasn't Indy Hartwell, it was Carlito. And again, it's sort of staring you right in the face. but that's fine. And then the main event was Naomi versus Bayley for the Women's Championship for reasons. In the skybox, in one skybox there was Damage Control, in the skybox right next to them there was Jade and Bianca, because why not stick them on my TV screen? Naomi and Bayley versus each other for the Women's Championship was fine. They know each other well. It was babyface versus babyface, and you knew there wasn't really going to be an ending, and they kept on cutting to the skybox, because look, we'll tell you with the subtlety of a sledgehammer, this is the overarching story. Look at these teams that are forming, even though we're nowhere near, say, something like, I don't know, War Games. It's not November. It's fucking April. So they did very competent babyface versus babyface wrestling. I don't think Naomi's that great. I don't think Naomi's terrible, but she's not exciting. Her new entrance sucks. I liked her old entrance. I liked her entrance in TNA. This one is trying to mimic the entrance in TNA, and it's not quite getting it. Very, very cool. Very, very cool to see how the crowd is properly adopting Bayley as theirs. Once again, that's nice to see. They brawl to the outside. They sort of have a half-ass brawl on the outside. And then Bayley is attacked by Tiffany Stratton, and the match gets tossed out. Because, of course, it does. Now, I kind of like this, where Tiffany Stratton came up from NXT. The Women's Championship pitcher on SmackDown kind of got swallowed up by this whole The Big Three versus Damage Control with Bayley somewhere in the middle. And we kind of had this cool moment where it's like, oh, there's all these big, like, Avengers Endgame, like, wars going on between these groups. And Tiffany Stratton just comes out and says, I'm not going to get lost in the shuffle. Takes out the champion, takes out the challenger, hits them with a double prettiest moonsault ever. And Tiffany Stratton is standing tall to end SmackDown, which I'm sure will anger all the right people. Why does Spaz like it? Because it pisses off all the right people. Oh, yes. Backlash already looks good. Street Profits versus Waller and Theory. It's going to be a lot of fun. I don't know who you put up for the Raw tag titles at the pay-per-view, since we're doing DIY next week. Jey Uso versus Priest and AJ Styles versus Cody Rhodes. Two matches where the endings are pretty predictable, but two very cool first-time challengers, etc. So, as I say, we're setting up Backlash. We got some new championships. Sheamus came back. We're continuing the introduction of Tama Tonga. Rhea Ripley, unfortunately, had to step away, which is unfortunate. We're looking forward to the introduction of Jacob Fatu. We're looking forward to who's going to be the new women's champion on Raw. We're looking forward to the eventual introduction of the Women's North American Championship on NXT. Don't know when that's going to be. We're looking forward to Spring Breakin' next week. If you want to put any predictions for that down in the box below, I'm going to be recording my predictions, like I say, in the next day or so. We are trucking along. We are trucking along to Backlash in Lyon, France. And I don't think we're losing any steam. I don't think we're getting a post-WrestleMania dip. Tell me what you think, though. Really want to know what you guys think down in the box below. With losing all the big names and the WrestleMania hype being over, do you think we're entering into that typical post-WrestleMania slump or not? Personally, I don't, but I'm only one person. Anyways, you know who I am? I am one person. I'm Spaz, your YWC Reality Check. Subscribe up there, talk down there, start a conversation. Keep all these conversations going. Don't be a stranger. I will talk to each and every last one of you later, but for right now, I am tagging out. Bye.